So first of all, we have agenda paper 17A, which is our work in progress paper, setting out the issues that have come to us that didn't get presented to you at this meeting. We have two ongoing issues where we're continuing to work on issues that will be brought to a future meeting. Two issues currently on hold pending progress on board projects, and six issues that we've received submissions but still to present the papers for the first time to this committee, and included among those six are two new ones for which the agenda submissions are included in the appendix. I wanted to ask if you had any questions about any of those. Luca?
This is okay. Just only a question. I hear some rumors in Italy that there is probably a request to make a clarification regarding EIS 12 on a case relating to the amortization of goodwill at single enterprise financial statement level and the parent level. Did you receive anything?
So this is the application of IAS 12 with relation to goodwill?
Yes.
Okay.
And tax, and the tax base relating to a goodwill that is amortized and that is transferred from one entity to another.
Okay. That's not one that I've come across yet.
Okay.
Okay. I'll make a
look
out for it.
Okay.
Yes. Martin?
Probably just a question of understanding. What is the status of this IAS 16, IAS 38 contingent pricing of property, plant and equipment and intangible assets? According to my understanding, it was discussed at the board, and the board shifted it back to the interpretation committee saying, hey, we are waiting for some guidance. On the other hand, it was said, okay, probably if we have done something with the framework. So how would we label this on what is the status of this?
That's the one I think we're waiting on leases, right? The board suggested that we should wait on leases.
So therefore, what is it? Is it pending work in progress, or how do we label it? I just went through the project, and to be honest, I missed it, and I don't know where it belongs to. And as it is, if there is divergence probably in practice, and it might be an important topic, I just come back to it and probably,
My understanding of this one, and Michael will probably correct me, is that we wanted to move ahead on it independently, and the board advised us to wait because they were concerned that they might get a different answer in the leasing project. They might get the same answer.
And so they just said, wait a couple of months. Couples turned into more than a couple, but that happens, until they've reached their conclusions in the leasing project. So
this would be on the home board, you said.
Okay. Then the next paper is paper 17B, which provides you with a summary of the statistics of the activities, of the committee's activities over the first four meetings of this year, so through to July. I think the points to note here are the table on page 4 and the summary on page 3. Which looks at, does a brief analysis of what you've been looking at. And I think just a couple of points to highlight, perhaps. First of all, that there has clearly been a higher level of activity. You've been busier so far this year compared with last year. We also see that there's, over the last couple of years, a higher use of narrow scope amendments to address issues, and that is reflective of the conclusions in the trustees' review of the activities of the Interpretations Committee. It's still not at a particularly high level. We're still dealing with approximately 80% of the new issues that come to this committee, either through annual improvements or through agenda decisions, including, of course, where you give your technical conclusions as part of those agenda decisions. And I think a point to just note on the table on page 4, and that is that we include in the line that says total, which is not at the very bottom of the table, but 3 lines up, is the total activity. And then beneath that, we have the line beneath that, we have of that total activity, what is new this year? Because obviously each year can be affected in terms of total activity by the number of issues coming back for redeliberation through annual improvements or narrow scope amendments. The other table chart that I wanted to highlight is on page 13, which is an analysis of the number of issues by standard. Now, with this, we've gone back over the last 4 years to gather this information. Now, there is a degree of judgment involved in this because often there will be more than one standard affected by an issue that comes. So we've made a judgment in identifying what we saw as being the predominant standard that drove the particular issue, and that's how we analysed this here. And beneath that chart, we've got a few observations. As you can see from the chart, IFRS 3 is clearly the winner in terms of the number of issues that have come to the committee over the last 4 years. That, of course, is in the middle of a post-implementation review at the moment, and so those issues that came through will have been or will be considered as part of sort of the background of issues during the phase one of the post-implementation review. IFRS 39 being the second highest, of course, is in the process of being replaced by IFRS 9, and then third place IFRS 1, and you can see that the vast majority of those issues came through in 2010, which of course was the year prior to a number of countries adopting IFRS, and so I think that's unsurprising that that peaked in that particular year. But I wanted to obviously ask if you've got any questions at all with the data that's here. Also, just wanted to mention, it had been suggested that we might publish at the end of the year a sort of a look back over the committee's activities during 2013, and this would obviously feed into that and form the basis of that newsletter or report that we might do. And so I just want to also mention that to you so you could perhaps think about that in terms of any questions that you've got or suggestions you might have for when we look at the full year results.
One of our board members pointed out that the feedback statements that we do and the snapshots that we do on projects have been fairly successful in communicating as communication tools. And wouldn't it be nice if the Interpretations Committee had one of these fun tools? My immediate reaction was, oh, God, more work. You know, but in thinking about it, though, it didn't seem as crazy on reflection as it did initially, and I think what Michael's tried to do is to start to build that here. It wasn't you, Philippe, so...
But I think there are certain interpretations which are more important than others or more controversial, and where a feedback statement and or a snapshot could really help in communication.
Yeah.
I think if in 21, it would be nice to have a snapshot. I can think of IFRIC 12 going back. So some really are very, very are more hard to sell sometimes or raise more criticism or more controversy, and I think that communication is important.
Yeah, I think that's, I completely take your point that on the individual ones, especially on interpretations, it may be that we just have to think of a feedback statement for every single one, because it's not always obvious that something's going to be as controversial as it turns out to be. But this was more a general picture of communications tool about a general picture of the committee's activity, and so if you have comments about how to make it better, certainly feed those back to Michael. John?
Just a question, do we obtain any feedback from submitters as to their level of satisfaction once we reach the end of the process of considering their submission? Is there any process for... as to whether they felt that, as to whether they felt the outcome was helpful or they're obviously going to the effort of making the submission. I'm just wondering if there's any process for gathering.
I think I can predict one, but
that's a good question actually. And no, we don't go back specifically to submitters and ask them for their level of satisfaction or otherwise with issues. And I know that in sort of preparing issues to bring to you for the first time, that will many times involve a discussion with a submitter so that we can make sure we've understood their question. And sometimes they've said, well, you know, even if you do a rejection but you explain why, then actually we think that would be quite helpful.
It's not systematic, it's anecdotal. I can recall one in which the jurisdiction that raised the issue said, thanks, but that's not what we're going to do. And all you did was an agenda rejection notice, and we don't have to follow it. And had to admit, yep, they're absolutely right. An agenda rejection notice does not compel a change in practice. But there are others, I guess, that we really don't have that level of communication. We probably ought to have, I'd hate to get all formal about it, but we ought to be more systematically circling back to people. I take your point. Joanna?
I have received some unrequested feedback on our performance on certain issues, but I usually just delete those messages because...
I guess my question stroke comment is has got a similar theme to that, in that this is headed review of our activity. It to me is an absolutely typical output report. I'm sorry, done by accountants showing the numbers. We've done X, Y, and Z, and we've put out this number of things, and these are the little graphs that says it has says absolutely nothing about the outcomes. We have, you've set out in paragraphs 3 and 4 what our objectives are. Our objectives are to interpret the application, provide timely guidance, undertake other tasks at the request, and in particular in paragraph 4, our role is working in partnership with the ISB to give guidance that responds to the implementation needs of those applying IFRS. If we're doing a review, to me, the review is, have we achieved that during this year, or have we enhanced that during this year? And to me, we should be answering that question, and that may very well be doing a survey. You say you don't want to make it formal of the submitters, because at the end of the day, there is absolutely no point in you flying me from New Zealand. Sorry, I shouldn't be saying this. You might say there is no point. You're quite right. for me to sit around this table for 2 days every 2 months to produce all of these things if they are not serving the purpose of what we're here for. And I know that we have a formal review every 4 years, but just like when I sit on a board, we do a self-review every year in terms of our performance. And it's not have I turned up to the meetings, it's actually have we done what our objective as a director, as directors are, as a board. So I encourage you, Michael, if you like, in terms of whether you put something out as a snapshot or something else, to actually consider, okay, yep, these are the outputs, but actually, what is our report card? What were our KPIs? And maybe for next year, to set the KPIs, to say, what actually should we be looking to achieve? You know, we want to get X percent satisfaction, or whatever it may be. And you may think that's formal, but it's an appropriate thing. And I then come to your graph at the very last page, where you actually say, and to me, again, it's a very useful graph, but actually, what does it mean, and what are the recommendations that emanate from that? And as you've said, the IFRS 1, it is showing something. So what is the story that goes with that? And the fact that this year, 19 and 2 have been predominant, shouldn't we actually be saying something to the ISB about the fact that 19 and 2 are the predominant ones and why and what does that mean, and a recommendation to the ISB as to we should do more or they should do more or whatever it may be. So it's very interesting. It is 13 pages of useful information, but I'm not sure it necessarily is as useful as it could be, Michael.
Freezing the paint dam.
Philippe, and then we'll close.
I will also maybe add to this presentation a note of interest to see some of the topics which have been hot reporting issues during the crisis, like impairments, do not show up as requiring interpretation. There is nothing about IS 36 here. Although, according to ESMA, according to some others, impairments have been a key point over the last 2 years. That also shows that the standard is clear and doesn't present any interpretation difficulties, which is as important, I think, to know as knowing that in the first year of application, FRS1, you have some issues, which, right, of course, it's not a surprise, But I think it's as important, this analysis, by what is shown as but what doesn't show up here.
Yeah, and I think I don't mean this to sound defensive, although it's almost impossible to say it without it sounding that way. We are, to a degree, victims of our own process. We don't go out looking for trouble. And we deal with what's submitted to us. Now, Philippe's steering committee is trying to enhance the process of shaking things out by improving our intelligence gathering system and improving our interaction with regulators. But to a degree, if somebody doesn't ask, we don't answer. Kind of the have gun will travel school of business. And I say that sounds defensive, but that limits our ability to accomplish some of what Joanna is asking for. I take her challenge, though, that we ought to think more clearly about, yeah, we did all this stuff. Does it serve the objectives that were set down for us? And we need to make that loop. And that's a valid point. Scott, last comment.
Just looking at the numbers, our activity looks like it's up. The list of pending issues is a little bit longer than it has been in the past. I guess question back for Michael and others on the SAP, is there a resource issue at any level that is becoming evident with the increase in requests, either at the staff level or meeting time or whatever else?
You mentioned meeting time. I'll sort of talk about that one first. I don't think we've got a resource constraint in terms of the meeting time, and we are finishing now at before 10:30
right.
On the second day, so I don't think that's a constraining factor. As regards staffing, staff work pretty hard, you know, and I make them work pretty hard. So.
Denise is smiling.
Yes, there's perhaps a slightly longer list in terms of new issues waiting to come through. I don't feel that it's out of control, so I think we are sort of keeping on top of it. So it's always something that we're looking at. A number of our team come to us on secondment for, say, a 2 or 3 year period, and so there's obviously a constant turnover and handover phases and that sort of thing that give us with sort of peaks and troughs of staffing levels through the course of the year, but that's just natural to reflect the way the staffing model works. I've not got particular concerns. Obviously, we're continually looking ahead to see, you know, who we might bring in as a new secondee, as existing ones rotate off. But I've not got particular concerns presently.
I think I would say it a little differently. One of the things that I've always tried to understand in standard setting is where's the narrow end of the funnel?
Yep.
Right there. We place enormous reliance on the ability of things to get through Michael and to be delivered out of the funnel sufficient quality that we can all work with them.
Okay.
And that is an issue that we've identified internally. We need to get him more help. Adding five new practice fellows is just going to increase the pressure on things to go through the funnel, but ain't going to make the hole any bigger. So we do need, I think, and we've talked about that internally, and it's part of Michael's career planning, that we need to work on how to help that out.
We need to build a bigger Michael.
Yeah. Or clone him or something like that. Okay. No other comments appearing. We will proceed to close. Thank you very much. It's been a good meeting. Thank you.